Hi, I'm Sanjay, and I'm a serial entrepreneur for the kicks, and I also invest in startups.
And I'm Shannon, a recent college grad working on building my first company.
And this is Startup Days,
the show where we take a behind-the-lens look at starting and growing a company from the perspective of founders and investors. Welcome to another episode of the Startup Days podcast. Today, I'm joined with Charles and Daniel from Synapse, and I'm going to go ahead and let them introduce themselves and give you a little background on where they're from so you can get to know them before we dive into the story of Synapse.
I'm Daniel. I have a neuroscience degree from Columbia University.
Hey, I'm Charles. I'm currently studying biomedical engineering at Georgia Tech. And we're the founders of Synapse. We went through the CreateX program at Georgia Tech. That's how we got started. And I've recently joined ATDC as an accelerate company.
Awesome. So taking it back even before that, where are you guys originally from?
So I was born in Reno, Nevada. I lived there for 14 years, and then my parents moved to Winston-Salem, North Carolina for work. So they work at Wake Baptist, a research part of that hospital, which is actually where I met Charles.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I was born in Miami, Florida, grew up in upstate New York before moving to Athens, Georgia, where my parents were professors at UGA. And when I was in high school, I moved to North Carolina, where my parents taught at Wake. And I met Daniel at an internship at the Wake Forest Medical Center in the Wake Forest Innovations branch.
So it sounds like you guys both were raised in an environment with a lot of emphasis on research and academia. Is that correct?
I would definitely say so.
Yeah.
My parents always put a big emphasis on education, working in that industry, of course. Daniel came from sort of the science background as far as his parents, but he actually, I think, focused a lot of his efforts in school more on the humanities, if I'm correct in saying that.
Yep, and, that's definitely true.
My parents actually taught business, yet I went down the sort of engineering and science pathway.
Right, but then you became an entrepreneur, so their business influence might have kind of had some impact.
And Daniel became a neuroscientist, so I guess we really can't escape our fates.
That's true. Did you have any desire to be an entrepreneur from a young age?
I've always been fascinated with the idea of being an inventor. If you asked me when I was a child, I would say a fireman, but that's a little bit too young. And then when I got a little bit older, I would say an inventor. That's what I wanted to be, an inventor. And I think as I got older, I realized the closest thing you can study in school to being an inventor would be being an engineer. So that's kind of how I went down that pathway. And then, you know, saw all the vibrant entrepreneurship community in Atlanta and saw all the people that were taking their ideas and making them a reality and really building something out of their heads. And that fascinated me, and I just knew immediately that that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to give it a try and see if I could, you know, create that. And then for, I would say, a few years now, I've really, maybe the past 6-7 years, I've wanted to own my own business. And so when I heard about all the entrepreneurship activities going on at Georgia Tech, right where I was studying, I knew that I had to jump in and give it a try.
I've always been pulled in a few different directions, like Charles was mentioning. A lot of my early years, even up through high school and in college, Columbia has a really rigorous core curriculum, and they focus a lot on the humanities, English, literature, that type of stuff. So I've always been pulled in a few different directions. I was always fascinated, like Charles was mentioning, not necessarily with being an inventor, but with the process by which you take ideas that only exist in your own head and bring them into the physical world for people to interact with. When I was in like third or fourth grade, I started a business making paper clothing for erasers that I would sell to other kids in the class. And it became like a whole thing that I had to get shut down by the principal.
Wait. Let's back up. So you made paper clothing for erasers.
Yeah. So you have a standard Staedtler white eraser.
Okay.
Standard dimensions. You can actually take the cardboard sleeve off of that, fold some nice construction paper around the outside of that. You can use colored pencils to create different outfits that people might be interested in.
Okay.
For instance, an army man or a doctor, depending on the kid's interest.
Okay.
And you can actually sell those for quite a substantial markup over the cost of the materials that you use to do that, which is why my parents got called in the first time to the principal's office. And I had to shut that Can't profit off of artistic endeavors in elementary school, I guess.
Oh, interesting. Good to know. Yeah, I always like to ask that because I think the more that you talk to people that have become entrepreneurs and have started successful businesses, there's this general theme of a lot of them starting their own businesses when they were a kid. Personally, I lived in a walkable neighborhood that was kind of a loop, and so I would put order forms in people's mailboxes on Thursday afternoons for fresh muffins baked on Saturday mornings. And so then I would go deliver hot muffins around the neighborhood Saturday morning for a substantial markup as well. So that was kind of mine, but no principle to shut it down. So, okay, so you guys then crossed paths and you kind of both had this maybe general interest in entrepreneurship that wasn't yet refined. But when you met, how did you progress that relationship to what eventually would become Synapse?
Yeah, so we actually met in some very interesting circumstances. It was an internship opportunity at the medical device development branch of the hospital at Wake Forest University. And it wasn't actually an internship, though. It was more like an internship that was developed specifically for the two of us. So we were the only two people participating. We worked together. We shared a cubicle. So a lot of close contact with one another.
It's a really good test run for being a co-founder.
Exactly. It was perfect. We didn't know that's what it was at the time, but it really was perfect for that. But we had some pretty limited direction. We had a nice list of projects that were currently in the pipeline. We found that we worked really efficiently and well together. We had skills that complemented one another, and we were able to sort of work through that backlog of projects in about a month and a half. So halfway into this summer-long internship, we worked through all of the projects, you know, studying the product market fit, creating business cases for these ideas, meeting with doctors and staff members from the hospital, learning about their ideas and potentially seeing what could be commercially viable as a product or a service. And so that kind of gave us a lot of background that became very useful in the future when we started to develop our own ideas. And so once we finished out a lot of these projects, there really wasn't much for us to do. And our supervisor at the time actually encouraged us to go on and start working on some of our own ideas. And we actually developed a medical device on our own during that program that we received a patent for. So that was kind of our first joint creation we worked on. We created a novel breathing therapy device to help people treat the symptoms of chronic bronchitis and COPD, and we patented that. And that was one of the handful of ideas that we actually later pitched to the CreateX program as a potential startup idea.
Okay, so you create this device, and then you go back to Georgia Tech, you go back to Columbia. Is that what happened after this summer internship?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, so we went back to our respective schools, kept in close contact, kept sort of spitballing different ideas, seeing what sticks, working on a few different things. And one of those ideas was a very early version for what later became Synapse. And Daniel always tells that story really well, how he first received the initial inspiration. But yeah, we actually came in with a binder. Daniel flew down from New York to attend the interview for the CreateX program that I had heard about on campus. And we had printed out these binders and got them like spiral bound at FedEx or something and brought them in, just a folder of our ideas and how they were going to work and what we were thinking about doing. So I think we were one of the few groups of people that actually pitched multiple ideas, which was probably interesting for the program to see.
And what was the feedback that you got from that?
The feedback was focus. They said, these are great. It's awesome that you guys have so many different things.
And that you've taken the initiative to put them in a spiral-bound binder.
Exactly, right. I think that was definitely some of Daniel coming through right there.
Yeah, the liberal arts education really puts an emphasis on getting that nice, clear sheet to go on the front of the reports. It always helps. It's helped me my whole life, and it hasn't let me down yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's like something that seems so obvious, but most people don't do. Okay, so you get into CreateX, spoiler alert, you guys get in, and you are told to focus. So how do you kind of funnel down the binder to what is now Synapse?
Right, yeah. So the feedback we immediately got, it was, these are going to pull you in way too many different directions. At one point, we had this idea where we were actually going to self-fund through like a hedge fund management that then funneled back into product development. It was a very complicated and convoluted system. Mm-hmm. And they said, look, guys, you know, that's going to pull you in too many different directions. You really need to focus. This idea for this drink is really interesting. I think you guys should work on that. And that's essentially what the feedback we got was, you know, like, this has a lot of potential. We could see this getting really big. You guys should focus on that. Come do the program with this idea. And where that idea initially came from is has a pretty interesting origin as well.
Yeah. So like we mentioned, after the internship, we both went back to our respective schools. Charles and I at that point had a real taste for sort of developing ideas and the process that was needed to bring them to market. That's what we were doing for ideas that doctors at the hospital were coming up with. It's what we did with our own patent for the halotherapy device, like Charles was mentioning. So we were both in kind of an entrepreneurial mindset, although we were separated from each other and both still taking academic classes. And I was actually in my sophomore biology class, like the introductory biology class that you have to take as any kind, like a biochemistry major, neuroscience major, the general biology class. And we were learning about the Krebs cycle, which is actually, if you're not familiar, the process that the cells in your body use to produce the energy that's used by all the cells in your body. So taking the sugars that you consume and converting them into energy that can be used. And I had this kind of idea looking at the actual chemical pathway that the process uses. And I said, what if we could create a product or an energy drink that instead of just using caffeine to keep you awake or sugar to kind of give you a jolt of energy, what if we included some ingredient that would actually speed up this process or would introduce a shortcut into this process? So you're eliminating some of the rate limiting steps in this process and giving your body some true physical energy. So obviously, I was very excited by the prospect of this idea. I messaged Charles on Google Hangouts, which unfortunately is not going to exist next year, so I can't recommend that people use that to communicate. But Charles and I did most of our early communication like through Google Hangouts. So I sent him the idea, and Charles actually brought a lot of his background to bear on formulating that idea for an energy drink that optimizes the body's performance into what it is today.
And was this stuff, the actual ingredients when you were designing the drink, was this stuff that you had kind of already learned about, or was this a mostly self-taught process?
Yeah, so I would say definitely more on the self-taught side of things. I thought the idea that Daniel pitched to me was pretty fascinating because it kind of hit on a major point, this important distinction in the word energy. In the context of most food and beverage products you see on the market, when they say energy, it means they've added caffeine to it. If it's an energy granola bar, it could be a granola bar with caffeine. If it's an energy drink, it's essentially a soda that has a lot of caffeine in it. But, you know, if you look at chemistry, biology, physics, what does the word energy mean? I mean, we're talking about a fundamental unit, like a calorie. Like, energy is this measurable quantity that has nothing to do with the chemical called caffeine, right?
Right. It's all been marketed to us that way.
Exactly. So this sort of distinction when we use the word energy, you know, is caffeine really energy? Well, no, it's a drug that provides you with feelings of alertness and wakefulness through its neurochemical properties. Well, you know, what if there was this drink that could give you actual energy? You know, it could improve the way your body utilizes the calories it takes in and converts those into exciting forms of energy, you know, things that you can use to get along with your day and do the things that you do on a daily basis even better. And so I also, you know, was thinking about this drink, and I had at the time a lot of experience with nootropics, coming from sort of the underground online movement of biohacking, you know, taking your biology into your own hands and experimenting with different nutritional supplements and different behavioral practices to, you know, optimize your mental and physical performance. That's kind of what I was really interested in all throughout high school. I was taking different herbal supplements and, you know, experimenting with these different dietary ingredients to stay ahead of the game when it comes to workload, do well on my, you know, standardized tests, get ready for SAT college. And I found a lot of them, you know, worked really well. I could sort of feel this improved sharpness. And so I said, you know, if we're going to make an energy drink that has healthy energy, why don't we make it also have that ability to improve mental performance, you know, sharpen your focus, that when people drink energy drinks and stay up all night in the library, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for, you know, improvements to their mental state, something they can drink that will allow them to go for longer, you know, study harder, learn more effectively.
So what are nootropics?
Right. So nootropics, they can be vitamins, nutrients, minerals, amino acids, or all forms of biological compounds that can improve mental performance and aspects of cognition without negative side effects or addictive properties.
So what are some ones that most people would be familiar with?
The most popular drug in the world and what could also be considered a nootropic would be caffeine. That's one that almost everyone is familiar with. There's a lot of excellent compounds in green tea that people are familiar with. Those nutrients could also be considered nootropics. They have neurological effects. Some of the more interesting ones that we use are actually natural compounds that are found in a variety of different herbs. So these sort of smart herbs contain these compounds that have been part of the human diet for hundreds, if not thousands of years through traditional herbal medicines, you know, like the Ayurvedic practices of India, the traditional Chinese medicine of China. These compounds are found naturally in these ingredients that people would make like a strong tea out of, and that would provide some benefits. You know, they would use these to study long hymns and passages and texts, sacred texts. They would have to study and learn lots of material and hold in their head. So they've discovered these sort of natural compounds.
Okay, so you guys figure out, you know, we're going to use nootropics, we're going to create this energy drink, we're going to redefine the way that people are thinking of energy and create a better product than what's existing on the market. How do you actually go about that? Do you go to a lab to do that? Do you do that yourself? What does that process look like?
Right, so we very quickly learned that while we might have this idea that we think is pretty awesome, we do not know how to make a drink at all.
Yeah.
So it's a complicated process. It's a tough industry to break into. The first step we had to come up with, you know, what's going to be in it and how are we going to make it taste good, right? Because a lot of these natural ingredients, they have these awesome health benefits, but man, they do not taste good. So actually masking those bitter agents and making them into the format of a beverage that people can drink and enjoy and something that can also be produced at the massive scale that beverages are produced these days was a huge challenge, and it wasn't something that we alone were equipped to undertake. One of the first things we did after joining the CreateX program was finding the right partners in the industry to work with. So we ended up working with a lab who specialized in developing foods and beverages.
And was it tough to get them to work with you, just a couple of college kids that are trying to create a drink, or were people receptive to that?
No, absolutely tough. You know, we were reaching out to dozens of different firms and labs and development organizations trying to find someone who'd be willing to work with a startup.
Yeah, and I would say the lab side of things was a little bit easier than, as we get farther along in the story, the actual manufacturing and production of the product, since some of the labs are willing to take a chance on making prototypes or test versions of products for you if you have an idea, since there's not a huge amount that they have to lose from that.
Right.
The real difficulty comes when you look for manufacturing partners who will produce something for you at scale. And like Charles was mentioning, the beverage industry operates on very large volumes. They're used to big companies like Coke or Pepsi coming in and making millions of cans at a time. So if you, like you said, are two college students who want to make a test run of 10,000 cans of this very interesting new energy drink product, most co-packers or manufacturers will laugh in your face. But as far as finding the lab, it was about identifying, like Charles mentioned, a team that had the right skill set to do what we were looking to do. Which has never been done before. That's actually one of the unique aspects of Synapse, which is take these herbal ingredients, like Charles was mentioning, that have a very bitter flavor, which is the reason that most of the time you'll see them in a pill format that you just swallow in the morning. So actually taking those ingredients, making them taste good, and dissolving them in water actually proved to be quite a challenge too. So identifying a team that had the necessary expertise to do that and a team that would be able to produce for us, like Charles was mentioning, a small-scale product that could then be scaled up to a commercial manufacturing run without there being any variance in the quality or in the nature of the product.
And how many iterations do you think it took until you've arrived at the product that you're at today?
I think we're sitting at number 17.
Okay.
With the newest production run that we've done. And that's including all the different iterations that were sent back and forth, testing out different sweetener blends, flavor blends, that kind of stuff. And as far as commercially produced versions, we're on version 3 now.
Okay.
It's a big jump to go from making samples on a soda stream, which is actually what Charles and I did.
Okay.
For the demo day of the CreateX program, if you remember.
Yep.
We hand carbonated, produced, and bottled like 800 or something small bottles of Synapse. So you can.
How long did that take you?
It took us actually, I think, all night, right, Charles? I think
it was an all-nighter for sure. You know, we had ordered hundreds of these labels and bottles and caps, and we had syrup concentrate that we chased down the truck, the delivery truck, which missed the delivery window in the morning, had to go get the syrup concentrate, and we had to, you know, bring in tons and tons of carbonated water, mix these batches, hand bottle them, and then actually the most laborious part was the hand labeling, peeling off these labels, aligning them on the bottle and rotating them. It was an all-nighter for sure, getting that ready.
And what's kept you going through all of these all-nighters and through reaching out to hundreds, thousands of different organizations that you're trying to work with? And why have you kept going with it this up until this point?
Well, I would say we definitely drink quite a bit of our own product.
Yeah. Do you drink it every day?
I would say not every day. I definitely drink it when I need that extra boost of focus, most weekdays, for sure. And it's great to drink it over a period of time because that allows a lot of these ingredients to sort of build up to the proper biological level and become more effective. But, you know, taking breaks every once in a while is great as well.
Do you still drink coffee, either of you?
Yes. So we are, and I know our product has no caffeine, but we're actually not caffeine haters.
Okay.
We both enjoy coffee quite a lot. I do control the levels of caffeine that I consume because I think over-caffeination you know, has been shown in several studies to have some negative side effects, and it's important that people are aware of that. So taking tolerance breaks, you know, making sure I'm not dependent on caffeine is important to me, but I still do drink coffee, and I enjoy my single origin blends quite thoroughly.
But it was that benefit of your own product that really kind of pushed you guys through.
That has definitely helped. However, I would say the main thing is really the feedback we get from people who are helped by it. A lot of people who have ADD, ADHD, have trouble focusing, who have, you know, perhaps just tons of work to get through, and they feel they can't do it on their own. They need some assistance. They need a boost. They need as much as they can get from themselves. And they tell us how well the product works for them, how much they like it. You know, that makes us look back and think, all right, like you know, this is worthwhile. If we're helping people, you know, really be the best version of themselves and achieve the things they truly want to in life, then it's definitely worth the sacrifice that we make sometimes to make sure that they have, you know, a powerful and healthy product available to them that really does help them.
So when you were thinking of these people from the start, did you have a group in mind? Like, what was your ideal market in the beginning? And has that changed as you guys have grown?
I would say yes and yes, definitely. So we knew, we saw what was happening on college campuses. You know, there's a huge issue in the United States where students are taking things like Adderall, Vyvanse, other ADD and ADHD medications without a prescription, selling them to their friends, passing them around. And over-consuming caffeine as well. You know, the in young people, the amount of caffeine they consume daily has risen tremendously over the past few years. People are drinking, you know, tons of coffee, multiple energy drinks in a single day, staying up all night in the library, you know, popping these medications without a prescription before class, before they study. You know, so there's clearly a need because people are going to these, you know, crazy places to try to find a solution to help them with their mental performance. So there's definitely a need for this, we saw. And the current practices that are employed are simply not healthy. So, you know, we knew that that students could really benefit from a product that can improve that mental performance without those negative health effects. So students was certainly the target market we were trying to go after. And that has changed a lot because, you know, we've tried to explore more in the market where we put this product and the results we get and learning about, you know, who likes this product, why do they use it, what are they using it for. And we've seen the health and fitness sector, you know, they've been taking to this stuff tremendously well. People who really care about what they put in their bodies, who are looking at the label and understand the supplement facts and the nutrition facts panel, you know, how many artificial flavors and sweeteners I'm putting in my body, that whole crowd, we've seen a lot of adoption with as well.
Yeah, it kind of feels like the time is right for this now as the market is sort of shifting more and more in that direction as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So fast forwarding, so you went through CreateX. What has happened since you graduated from that program?
Right after the CreateX program, Charles and I actually brought on our third co-founder, Shovik, who has an almost 20-year-long career as an executive at Coca-Cola. So he worked in marketing, brand development, brand management. And he's actually the one who's responsible for really helping us refine the messaging, what we wanted the product to look like, and how we wanted to communicate the value proposition that Charles has been talking about to consumers in an intuitive way that people are able to grasp and understand. And he was also instrumental in helping us to understand sort of the dynamics of the beverage industry. So how to get a beverage product into a store, or what exactly goes into manufacturing a beverage product in the first place. He's been invaluable as far as someone that we can go to as a resource to explain some of the nuances of the industry since he's been working in it for so long. So the period between 2016 and July of 2017, I was kind of shopping the idea around between Charles, Shovik, and myself, refining the pitch, refining the idea, refining the go-to-market strategy, sort of tightening up what exactly it is that we were looking to do with this product, and then seeking out some funding as well.
So after you left the CreateX program, you had a little bit of funding, but as you mentioned, there's very high minimums for this type of product, and it's going to take a lot of capital to do that. How did you go about securing that? How did you familiarize yourselves with that process? And just what does that look like for an entrepreneur that has a company in an early stage but hasn't gotten to that state yet?
As far as familiarizing ourselves with the process, the CreateX program was very helpful in terms of teaching us the ropes of how to build a pitch deck, or what exactly it is that a pitch for a startup should look like in terms of seeking investment. For us, the stage that we were at, it was very important that our first rounds of funding were from people who believed in the team more so than the actual business model itself, since obviously when you're at a stage where you don't have a product yet and you haven't been selling the product to consumers and you can't show data to investors, you do need to find people that really believe in the team and understand what it is that you're trying to do and believe in the vision that you have for the company. And then obviously as you grow and as you use those earlier rounds of funding to continue to build more data points, it becomes easier to go after larger investors who are looking more at the bottom line or the business model as opposed to the construction of the team itself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a process we are still to this day learning about. We've learned so much from our first pitch, walking into an investor's office and, you know, slapping a pitch deck on the table and discussing the business now to where we're at.
How did that go the first time you did it?
It was a good practice run. Let's put it that way. It was not very fruitful, but we certainly learned a lot. We've come a long way since then. I don't think we actually ever gotten even an email response back from that.
So they didn't invest.
No, absolutely not. I thought we did a pretty decent job, you know, given where we were at that stage.
That's actually an important lesson. So the first, I think, mistake that we made coming out of the CreateX program was you need an investor. You have to look for someone who has a large amount of resources available to them and who will probably be interested in funding a project, right? But we went to a very large real estate investor in Manhattan who exclusively only invested in purchasing buildings and like remodeling them and selling them. So which we got that meeting through a personal connection. But you can imagine that he was kind of confused when we came up to his office on like the 80th floor and we're explaining to him that we wanted to make an energy drink that would help college students studying, and then that we were looking for like $100,000 in funding or whatever. And this individual usually makes like $80 million building purchases. So it was definitely a lesson in trying to find an investor that matches well in terms of their experience set, as well as has some sort of expertise or understanding of the area that you're trying to create a company in.
Yeah, that was the lesson for sure, and something we really took to heart. So, you know, since then, we're a lot more careful that we make sure who we're meeting with, you know, understands the sector of the business we're going after, you know, can provide value back to the startup. It's not just about money, of course, as I'm sure, you know, most people are aware of. It's about what other types of value they can add, whether it's connections, experience, or even creating a cohort with other companies they've invested in. That's really important and really helpful in having the right group of investors because you know they want to be your biggest fans. They really want to bat for you when it comes to going on to the next rounds or being successful. And you want to make sure you're surrounding yourself not only with the right team members but also the right investors to lead you to meet those goals that you have.
And your most recent round that you guys closed was around 600,000. Is that correct?
We closed 750,000.
750,000. Wow.
As our seed round. Yep. Yep. And now we're actually turning our sights towards Series A coming in
okay.
the future. But with this seed round, if you just look at the exhibit of investors, we've got quite a bit of food and beverage experience. Some people have experience with other brands. Launching brands in the United States, a lot of retail experience. So, they definitely are the right groups to be involved with, for sure. And, have that proven track record of success and are able to, facilitate partnerships in the future.
So what does 2019 look like for Synapse? What are some of the goals for this year? What are you guys focusing on right now?
Yeah, definitely. We have big plans for 2019. This is really, really our year. We've learned a lot from our small scale testing, collecting data, learning about our customers, really keeping our ear to the ground. And we've been collecting this all so we can make our big push onto the market. Launching in the Southeast, we're going to be radiating outwards, and we're going to have product hitting the shelves through distribution agreements, as well as through agreements with some major retailers in the Southeast. So that should be very exciting. Some big names, some big partnerships coming up in the future on the retail side. And then, of course, we have some big online goals as well. In this day and age, if you're launching a brand, e-commerce is a given. You have to be there. You got to be on Amazon. You have to have your own website. You have to ship to your customers because, retail growth can be pretty slow. And if there's a customer out there halfway across the country who could really benefit from your product and wants to give it a try, there's no reason to wait before you can reach them when we can ship things across the world practically overnight these days. So, we've got some big online advertising and marketing goals to really get our product out there and show people what nootropics are and how they can benefit their life.
Awesome. Well, that sounds great. I look forward to seeing what happens. What pieces of advice would you guys give now that you're 3 years in to someone that's just starting out?
It's going to be a roller coaster, so make sure you're wearing your seatbelt. There's going to be ups and there's going to be downs, and it can, things can change course extremely quickly. So it's always good to, keep perspective when things are tough. And, we've been through some very tough times. We've been through some awesome times. And it's important to, remember that things are always going to change and that you do have the ability to dig yourself out of a tough situation if you can, bear it for a few weeks or maybe even months at a time. Things can improve. New opportunities are always on the horizon, but just make sure you're ready for that. It's not a lifestyle for the faint of heart because it can definitely be tough. And, you're going to have those all-nighters where you need to stay motivated and keep looking towards the future.
Well, now you'll have a Synapse for when you have the all-nighter. So
right.
There you go. Problem solved.
Exactly.
Charles and I actually had to make a rule. We're not allowed to panic or freak out over bad news unless it's been at least 48 hours from when we receive it. Since, like Charles said, in some cases it can vacillate like pretty wildly. The other thing that the CreateX program instilled in us that I think is definitely good advice, it is tough to do it alone. It is better to have a co-founder, especially in the moments like Charles was mentioning when it gets tough. If you have two people, it's a lot easier to shoulder the burden or try to figure out a way to work out problems if you have two different viewpoints or three different viewpoints coming at it. What might seem impossible to one person, another person might have a good idea for solving, or it might even look like an opportunity. So I think having an involved team, a team that works well together on like a professional level but also on a personal level, is also very important if you're gonna, like Charles said, embark on this wild ride.
Yeah, awesome. Where can people follow along with Synapse?
You can follow us on Instagram at drinksynapse, our website drinksynapse.com, And we're actually working on building out a Twitter presence too, but we don't have any content posted there yet.
Okay. And available on Amazon and in some stores in Atlanta right now with more to come. I'm sure that'll be posted on your website so people can go there to figure out where to buy Synapse.
Yep. Amazon Prime with free 2-day shipping. Or we're actually doing a promotional 4-pack on our website now for $9.99 with free shipping for first-time customers. So if you want to give Synapse a try, if you're not sure if it's for you, you can take advantage of that offer and get 4-pack shipped to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for being on the Startup Days podcast.
Thank you for having us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.